In episode 3, we chat with Bubbly Beck Chambers, a positive role model for women who loves to lift heavy things, dance badly, and is a donut lover.
She describes herself as a lady who trains the house down and wins every day. As someone who previously thrived off restriction, she now is enlightened by balance and a better relationship with food and herself.
Personal trainer and coach Beck and fiancé Nick Cheadle have recently opened a gym, Paragon Strength and Performance in Artarmon, New South Wales. They describe it as more than a gym and more of a community where members can feel safe and confident with amazing coaches to help them achieve their goals. Beck also competes in powerlifting competitions and trains clients on correct lifting techniques. She enjoys coaching her clients to be the best versions of themselves, whilst helping them achieve incredible PBs.
We speak to Beck about challenges faced when starting up a new business and how important it is to be real in social media world these days. She's the definition of real, raw, and rad. We look forward to sharing this episode with you and hope that you enjoy it as much as we did chatting to Beck.
Thank you so much for coming on to our podcast today, Beck. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to basically start off with checking in on how your ISO is going, how are you surviving, and how are you spending your days at the moment?
I guess, like, in terms of, like, my personality type, I'm probably well-suited to isolation. It's weird. Like, I never have considered this, like, reality that we were ever going to be stuck indoors or that it was going to be, like, government mandated. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard because I don't want to, like, rejoice in the fact that a lot of people are sick and, you know, our healthcare system is on its way to overwhelm, or hopefully not here in Australia. But there are some, like, there's certainly some positives to being isolated that I can see and experience. I guess it's the main thing that's happened is that I've realized that I don't have to do everything all at once or, you know, pack my schedule absolutely full as maybe I would have if we weren't in isolation. So from that perspective, I'm really enjoying it. And how am I spending my days? It's pretty sad. I love routine. Like and it's really easy for me to get into like a boring routine. So I've been sleeping in, which is great because I think I was probably a bear in a previous life. Like I could hibernate for a while. I could sleep for 12 hours, like easy. Yeah. And then, yeah, like generally I wake up, have a coffee, check in with clients, do some Zoom calls with clients, do feedback, video feedback. Probably the hardest thing of the big routine change was like migrating all of my clients to online because a lot of what I do is face-to-face, and then also migrating everyone to stuff they can do at home has been challenging. And it's obviously not what I would normally do because I love barbell training, but we've just had to make it work. And yeah, I've never looked forward to a walk as much as I have in the past like 16 days. Like my partner Nick will text me from the next room and be like, are you ready for a walk? And I'm like, yes, like I'm so ready, you don't even know how ready I am.
It's just like everyone thrives off routine and just so many hours in the day, you just feel like you need to constantly be busy and doing something, and when you're not, that's when you're like, oh am I wasting my time, should I be doing something? And it stresses you out quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, you know, aside from the whole like walk thing, what else do I do? Nothing really. Like we've got a gym in our garage, so we're pretty blessed in that respect. I taught my dad how to FaceTime, which was a bit hit and miss. And I've also just been like making sure that I've talked to friends over Zoom and stuff like that so that I don't forget that there's humans outside of our two-story house. Which is easy to do, right? It's so strange to think that everyone is going through exactly the same thing right now and just trying to like make it work, basically.
So yeah, it's just the uncertainty of how long we're going to be in this for. Nobody knows, so it's just trying to get on with everything, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. There's some opportunities in it.
For sure. And yeah. You were meant to get married on the weekend.
Yeah. So we went to get married last Saturday, 4th of the 4th. And obviously that couldn't go ahead, but we also did make the decision before it was like, you know, a government enforced thing. So we're lucky because we kind of got in before everyone else had to make the decision too. I got back from, so silly, but I was in London like 4 weeks ago. And it almost felt like it was overnight that this all happened. Because when I got to London, it was the 2nd of March. Everything was fine. Everything was normal. London was just ticking along as it normally does, I assume. And, you know, we went to Hungary and we had a great time in Hungary, my best friend and I. And then by the time I got back to London 7 days later, it was like a completely different place. And it was like all of a sudden I realized like, oh, I really want to get home. Mm-hmm. And then we got home and within like 24 hours, I just realized that our wedding was 2 weeks away or 3 weeks away at the time. And it was just not going to be able to happen. But Nick and I kind of like, we just didn't want to have to make the call. So we discussed it with my parents, and my dad is sick. He's not very well. And so it was going to be a bit risky for him. And then my mum is also, I mean, she's got cancer, but she's pretty fine. But it was also going to be like risky for her because they're both quite immunosuppressed. So we thought we just can't do this. We can't risk like the two most important people to me being there. And we postponed it. And then obviously everything got even worse. And then all of a sudden you're only allowed to have a wedding with five people. So it wasn't too hard to change it. It's just more the fact that this will be the third time that we've planned a wedding.
So oh, wow.
I feel like we're starting to lose our audience, you know, like you can invite people to a wedding and they're super excited, and then you're like, we're changing it, and everyone's like, oh no, I really feel for you, and then you're like, we're changing it again, and people are like, you're starting to lose us now, you know, like you guys should probably just elope, we don't really want to be there anymore. It's the end of October now, so it'll be good. And silver linings, it was like super windy here on Saturday, and it was a country wedding. We were going to get married in Oberon, which is like past the Blue Mountains, and it was meant to be like highs of 12 degrees there on Saturday, so I would have frozen my nipples off basically.
Well, do you have something to look forward to when we get out of this? So
oh yeah, absolutely. I know, like once it finally happens, my speech, like for the wedding speech, I've got just so many good like on topic pandemic jokes to drop, so I'm really looking forward to that. Hopefully it's not too soon by the time that comes around. That interview, I don't know what I did, because I remember walking out of it being like, oh my god, they asked me so many questions I didn't have the answers to, and I thought like there was absolutely no way I was gonna land the job. And then they called me, got a second interview, and yeah, I ended up getting hired as their digital editor, which was a like title that was well beyond what I thought I was capable of doing. And they were in the middle of launching a new website, so they needed somebody to handle that basically. And I hope that none of them are listening to this, but I had literally no idea what I was doing. And I was really lucky that I had like a great mentor there who helped me. And I think I was there for 2 and a bit years, and then moved into other areas of media for some media agencies, and I thought that was going to be really fun, but it ended up just being a lot of work and a lot of drinking on Friday afternoons. And then my partner Nick won a personal training course through like some competition, and obviously he'd already done his personal training course, so I did it. And at some point I just decided I was going to take the leap and start coaching people, and so I quit my job, got a job at a gym right around the corner from us, and yeah, just slowly built up a client base, mostly face-to-face. I've never been like the biggest fan of online coaching. I find it really challenging. I just decided to quit my job one day, and I remember feeling so much panic around it. Like, what was I doing? But I was pretty lucky at the time. I guess I had, you know, a reasonable social following, so it was easy initially to get like a few clients on board, and then I just had to kind of pay my dues and build my client base up over time.
And so how long have you been a personal trainer coach now for?
When was that? So for almost 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Not that long really.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you think about it, it feels like it's been like a great chunk of my life, but it hasn't really.
No, because I've followed your journey on Instagram for quite a while now.
Yeah.
And I guess I've noticed that you've got a pretty thick skin when it comes to online you could say, bullying and people that like to attack online and that sort of thing. And that's what I really like about your Instagram and how you sort of approach everything. Have you always had such a strong skin? Or
I don't even have a strong skin. I don't even have a thick skin now. I've swindled you into believing that that's the case. No, definitely not. Especially when I first got onto Instagram, I can remember like the first like nasty comment I got, and it was like shocking. You know, something about the way I looked, or I don't know, you know, just back then it was like anything to do with the way that you look physically was like the worst insult that could possibly be hurled at you. Like, because the way you thought about your outside shell meant so much, and now it's like people can say really whatever they want about the way I look. I'd be much more insulted if they said I had like bad energy or they thought I was a nasty person. But yeah, it always used to get to me, and there were just so many days. I remember Nick actually sitting me down one day and being like, if this is going to have such an impact on you and like ruin your day and the way that you perceive yourself, because like I would wake up and be happy and then maybe somebody would write something that was hard to swallow or hard to read and it would kind of ruin the rest of my day. Yeah. And he basically just said to me like, if this is going to happen on a regular basis, is it really worth it? Like, what are you getting out of it? And I think at that point I really started to think about it. And I also, not that he wasn't trying to like condemn the way I was feeling, but he was basically putting me on the spot. And I think from there I just realized if I was going to stay on Instagram and kind of post the content that I was posting, that I had to be open to the fact that potentially there were going to be a few assholes that wanted to be not so nice. Yeah. But yeah, even now, you know, like if I read something that's not very nice, it still gets to me. I just have a different way of thinking about it. And I also am much more understanding that not everyone is going to agree with you. And also I actually don't care, like in my soul now, whether somebody thinks that I look aesthetically pleasing to them. But, you know, when somebody says like, oh, I actually think that, you know, one that comes up all the time is if I say something about like a fitness influencer that happens to be a female and I'm not agreeing with her, that I'm somehow anti-feminist or that I'm like against women. And that one usually upsets me somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how to deal with it sometimes. Like, I think just the amount of comments that get thrown around on people that have big followings and people that just like to attack others, it's just insane. It's like, don't you have anything better to do?
Yeah, I know. Some people have like second accounts to do it, which I only realized like a short time ago.
Kidding. So yeah, just wanted to move on to your business, Paragon Strength and Performance. What are some of the challenges you guys have had starting up your business? And obviously you work with your partner, Nick, on a day-to-day basis. So do you guys have any struggles living together and working together, or how do you go about that?
Nick and I working together, there's certainly like challenges involved in that. We are actually pretty good at it. I don't want to sound like everything's perfect, but we've definitely worked out how to make it work over time. We actually don't have a lot to do with each other's day to day in a working sense, even though, you know, we're in the same building together. We don't train the same clients, and he doesn't do an awful lot of face to face. So I'm in Paragon face to face a lot more than he is. And he's just taken the role as like the gym manager, and I'm kind of like the HR person, and also I'm definitely more the PR person. So he deals with the money. He deals with all the like membership stuff. I literally still don't know how to use the membership software very well. But the thing that I am good at is human relations. And I definitely take the lead on stuff like that and manage things with our coaches and manage things with clients and manage things with members. And I like it that way. And he likes it that way too, because he'd prefer to stay out of stuff to do with human relations as much as possible. Yeah. The challenges with Paragon have been bloody hell. We did not know what we were getting into when we opened a gym by any stretch. We had no idea. And yeah, that whole process almost like broke us apart because it was just so stressful.
Yeah, like,
right. Just getting the DA and going through council and, you know, having to do all sorts of construction stuff with the space that we ended up renting. It was nuts. But it was absolutely worth it. Like I said, it's definitely the best thing that we've ever done. And I'm so glad that we came up with the idea. But, yeah, it was a struggle.
And so for our listeners out there, Paragon Gym, how would you describe it? Would you say it's more of a small boutique type gym, or is it focused primarily on strength?
That's probably what we set out to do. We wanted to, I mean, I obviously am really passionate about powerlifting and barbell training for females. And Paragon is about 250 square meters. So it's not huge, and it's definitely not the size of any kind of commercial facility, but we've got 95 members. It's very community based. Like every member knows each other, which is what we set out to do. And, we were kind of inspired by the place we used to work, because we used to work at a gym that wanted to do that. They wanted to have like a really tightly knit community, and then they kind of changed their tact and they were going after elite athlete performance. And obviously at the time it wasn't something that really got me passionate. So we just decided that we wanted to move on and do something that really connected with us, which was just going into a space, a gym space, where it felt like you were part of a club.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we've achieved that. I think if you interviewed like all of our members, they'd all agree that they really feel like the place is like a club, and we're all like family, which is definitely lame to hear, but it really is the case.
Yeah.
Like, it's great, and I miss it.
It's so important in a gym as well.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I know. Like, I grew up playing a lot of team sport, and I could never understand why the gym, even though there are a lot of people in there that probably had similar backgrounds to me or even still playing team sport, the gym had no kind of like community atmosphere like that. It was like there were different factions within the, I guess, the commercial gym that I used when I was younger, but it wasn't like everyone knew one another. And nobody really knew stuff about each other. It wasn't like you were like, oh, I know that you're about to run a marathon and I know that you're about to do this. It was all just a bit segregated. So, but I guess it is easier to do that when you've only got 95 members. I don't know how it would be if you had 1,000, but.
No, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So you've also competed in a few powerlifting competitions as well. Like, how did you get into that?
So powerlifting basically started for me when I met a coach who was just this amazing dude, so strong, and he was heavily into powerlifting at the time, and it wasn't something that I was ever going to consider, but I'd been training with barbells for a while, and I guess like it sounds egotistical, but I was talking it out loud the other day, like how it all came about. And basically I just remember a lot of people being like, wow, you know, like I don't know many people that can like squat 100 or deadlift 120 or whatever I was doing at the time. So it was like other people kind of like pumping up my sense of self that made me decide that I might be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, had those people never said to me, oh, you're really strong, or you're stronger than the average girl, which is quite sexist in hindsight, I probably never would have even considered it. But once I did, I really just never looked back, because it's just, there's nothing, I haven't found anything as gratifying as, you know, working really, really hard and then getting like the outcome of lifting something heavier. Like it's very measurable, and it really like satisfies, it just satisfies something in me that other sports haven't, I guess. And so, yeah, I did a comp, and then I think probably the thing that initially motivated me to do more was that I did a comp, and then I started looking at like the top 10 in my weight class, like, and their numbers were astronomical, and I couldn't bear the fact that I wasn't anywhere near them. You know, like if I was going to do it, I wanted to be up there. with the best. And so because they were so far ahead of me, I had so much work to do. So, and I still haven't, I haven't anywhere near run them down. So I've still got a long way to go. And I guess in that sense, it's quite motivating, because if I'd, you know, if I'd achieved that already and maybe like I was up there in that top 10, I might have taken my foot off the pedal. But like I said, they're way better than me. Yeah.
Something to work towards. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what about like dieting? Do you guys follow any specific nutrition plans before comps, or like even, for example, at the moment, do you count macros? Do you follow any nutrition plan, or do you just eat intuitively?
Yeah, so it's always been flexible dieting for us. And I was definitely more hardcore about it maybe like 5 years ago. Felt it was like a religion to track your macros. I was like, that, I don't know if you could call me a loser, but I'd call myself a loser. I wouldn't put that label on others, but I was definitely that person that was like hashtagging like IIFYM on like every post I put up on my Instagram. And for anyone who followed me back then, I'm so sorry. But yeah, I still think that flexible dieting is probably like the most balanced and also natural, I guess. Natural, is that a good word? Yeah, I'm gonna go with that way of eating, because it requires you to have some kind of base of knowledge around like the energy in foods. And I think that there's a certain level of education that is necessary for anyone to kind of get their head around basic nutrition. And, you know, knowing how many calories are in a gram of protein maybe isn't necessary, but knowing how much protein one person might need to be healthy and recover well is something that I like most of my clients to know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, now when I need to drop weight, because powerlifting is a weight class sport, I'll always just flexibly diet and kind of track my macros in the off season, or in a time where I don't really need to be cutting weight at all. Then I just tend to eat whatever, to be honest. I am definitely more relaxed with my food now than I've ever been. But you know, I guess there's certain pressures on you due to the nature of powerlifting, that I've only got 72 kilos at the moment to fill out, and I want most of those 72 kilos to be filled out with something that's actually going to help me lift more on the bar. So keeping my body fat percentage down the lower end is going to help me in the long term, even though it can be uncomfortable to maintain. So yeah, there's always, unfortunately, unless I go up a weight class, there'll always be a need for me to have some kind of control over my nutrition. Whether I need to be completely pedantic about that is up to me. And yeah, I've just come off a cut because of the wedding. So I've like, the cut was absolutely fine, because I just wanted to look great on my wedding day, or feel lovely on my wedding day. But yeah, dieting certainly isn't as triggering to me now as it used to be. And I put that down to a wide range of things. But my ideas around dieting and dieting clients have certainly changed over the years. I don't really think it's necessary for most people to ever really restrictively diet, if I'm honest.
Because you love donuts as well, don't you?
I really do, yeah. yeah, and I like always think back to like that purple elephant idea, that is like, as soon as you tell somebody that they can't have something or shouldn't be doing something, that's all that they want to think about or do.
Yeah.
You know, like there are certain foods that I actually am not that attached to, but if you told me that I couldn't have them ever again, I think that I'd feel like I'd lost something.
Yeah.
You know, like chili sauce, not really something that I need to survive, but if you told me I could never have chili sauce again, I'd be like, so many opportunities lost, you know. Like I would have added it way more if I'd known it was going to be taken away from me like this, you know. It's like back to the isolation thing, like none of us expect we're ever going to be locked inside, and now that we are, we're like lamenting the loss of all the things that we'd never done before. Like I wanted to say, like, make a proclamation the other day that I was never going to leave a party at 10 p.m. ever again. Like, will I be able to stick to that for life? Like, probably not. Something I feel like I've lost right now.
So back to a bit of your powerlifting, I just am very intrigued at some of your personal bests with the lifting, because I know, and like, how do you kind of choose your next aim or your next goal for yourself?
It's challenging, right? Because as time goes on, so like as you continue strength sports, your ability to increase your total or your personal best becomes less and less, right? So it's like this horrible poetic injustice where the more you get into the sport, which is powerlifting, probably the more you love it, because 10 years in, God, you've got to really like that thing if you're still doing it a decade later, but the less likely it is that you're going to make like exceptional strength gains. And the harder you have to work to get them. Yeah, so like these days, and you know, I'm only like 3.5-4 years into actually powerlifting properly, and I just put up like some bunny ears beside me, because when I say properly, I've probably been trying to get strong for like 7 years, but I've only really been good at it for 4. But yeah, now I'd be happy with like a 1 kilo PB on all my lifts at a comp. Like if I got a 3 kilo PB, I'd be pretty stoked. Whereas I remember starting out, and if I got anything less than like 10 to 20 kilos on my total, it was a real disaster. So
what if you did a deadlift now? What would your what would your PB be? That's hard to say.
The best deadlift I've ever done in a comp is 178 kilos.
Wow.
And like every time, well, like next time I get to compete after all this is over, I'd be pretty stoked if I pulled 180, you know, so like 2 kilos on my best, but I'd be happy with that. And, you know, that could be like 6 months or more of work. Of training in the gym to get an extra 2 kilos, but that wouldn't be a failure by any stretch.
Yeah, wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even know what my PB is. I think I put like 5 kilos on each side and with the bar.
What do you do a little bit than that?
I don't do that much weight training, to be honest, but I need to do more. But even just being at home at the moment, I don't have much equipment. I've got a few resistant bands, a few 1 kilo weights, but to do any sort of proper weight training, it's just going to be so hard.
There's so much you can do at home, though. I'm getting so creative. You should see what some of my clients are doing at the moment. They're like got a band under their feet and they're on a deficit and they're doing tempo stuff. It's like you have to really think outside the box to make things difficult.
Yeah, for sure. And you did mention that most of your stuff is online now because you obviously can't be face-to-face. Yes. With your free time that you probably have, do you guys have any other projects that you're working on?
Yeah, you know, I going into this, I didn't want to just revert to my normal like overpacking schedule habits. So I've got all these ideas, but I'm trying to just stay calm and not do them all at once. But yeah, you know, I think now is probably a really good time to kind of look at processes and kind of get rid of things that aren't making sense with the way that you run your business. Like something that I have not taken advantage of enough is like Zoom calling and video calling with clients and how we can make things more interactive with feedback and stuff like that. So for the moment, I'm just trying to not be that person that suddenly like launches a new program or like changes their tact and really just kind of streamline the things I already do and make the service I give current clients better.
Yes.
But yeah, I'd really like to launch a podcast, and a good friend of mine, Shona Virtue, and I will probably end up doing something along those lines in the next couple of weeks just because we have the time. Yeah. But aside from that, nothing overly new. Nick will no doubt do some kind of crazy program where you have to do like 100 sets of arms in 5 minutes or something. But
he's mental. I've been following his his little daily workouts too as well, and he's
he's actually a great time to be able to do stuff like that though, you know, like everyone is at home and everyone is keen to move their body, and there's only so many like boring push-ups or bodyweight squats you can do before you lose interest, right?
I agree, and I feel like you can become more agile, like with all the movements and everything, your body just becomes, you can move so much better, and I find that just doing bodyweight stuff, bit of yoga, Pilates, that type of thing, it really helps with that agility there.
Yeah, I agree. It makes you feel really vital.
Yeah.
So to end our interview, we always finish with two different questions. So the first question is, what are your pro tips for forming healthy habits?
Oh, habits. So I late last year, I got to run a seminar with three of my really good friends, and it was at Paragon at our gym. And we were talking about how a lot of the time people ask, like, oh, how do you stay motivated? You know, like, how are you motivated to train all the time or do this or do that? And it brought us to this discussion on habits, because, like, and this isn't my anecdote, but a really good one that I like is, like, every day I'm not that keen to, like, brush my teeth, you know, like, I'm not, like, jumping out of bed being like, I cannot wait to brush my teeth. I'm not getting in there and, like, pumping music while I do it. But I do it because I know it's good for me, right? So I think that being able to attach some kind of understanding that what you're doing is good for you, you know, like, it's not necessarily enjoyable, it's not always going to be really exciting to do, but in the long term it is really, really good for you. And I think, although that may seem really basic, I think being able to end a session, and even if that session wasn't like 2 hours long and you're sweating and feeling really good and getting DOMS, that you can just be like, no matter how that session went, I know that what I did was actually a good thing for me, probably good for my mental health, whether I feel it straight away or not, and also probably good for my longevity and my bones, joints, bone density, stuff like that. I really think that that's the best way to get somebody to get into a habit, because if you feel like something's good for you, you're probably going to keep going even when it sucks.
Yeah, for sure. That definitely makes sense. And I think basic is kind of key when forming healthy habits anyway.
Yeah.
So the second question we've got is, who do you look up to in the health and fitness industry?
So many people.
Hard one. I know. Yeah.
Can I only say one person?
Oh, yeah. You can say two, but people are mine.
Only two, sorry.
Yeah.
I just started rattling off everyone, you know. People I look up to. So one person that I really look up to in the fitness industry, his name is John Paul Kauke, and he is somebody that I've always admired. He's an excellent powerlifter, and he's probably one of the strongest people in Australia. But I've always really admired him because he is authentic, but he's also not afraid to say when he doesn't know something. He's really science-based. He doesn't speak about things he doesn't know. And he's super passionate about barbell sports. And I think that that's really important, especially in powerlifting, because there's not a lot of money in it. And it's very volunteer-based. And he does a really good job at making sure that people get involved and keep the sport going. And the second person that I look up to in the industry is Sohee Lee, who is a great friend of mine now, and I'm very privileged to have her as a friend, because she is a pioneer for females in an extremely male-dominated area of the fitness industry. She's a PhD. She engages in science. She engages in research. She's extremely humble. She's very honest. And when I look at the way she runs her business, it's the way that I would like to run mine. And I've never met anyone with a bad thing to say about her. And I think that's kind of like a tribute, considering how quick people are to jump on women in the industry and find something terrible that they've done. So she's obviously done a really good job at maintaining a really good reputation. So yeah, those two. But like I said, there's like 100 people that I could probably cite, and I'm trying to copy them all at once, which is why I'm so random.
Yeah. Going back to the healthy habits that you were talking about as well.
Yeah. I was
back to David Goggins. He always says that there's not always going to be motivation, but if you have a habit there, then you'll continue to do that, because motivation is, some days you have it, some days you don't, but if you've got a habit there, you'll succeed with that goal, which I think is really good.
Oh, totally. And I also think, like, although maybe social media tells us that like fitness is only one thing, or, you know, going to the gym is all that fitness is, it's actually not. Do you know what I mean? Like, it can be as mundane as like going outside, or it could be as mundane as like taking the stairs instead of the escalator, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's these like little things that actually add up over time. It doesn't necessarily mean like you got to get into the gym wearing your matching activewear and like your fluoro colored shoes. It just, it just means actually just being active. That's enough of a habit to maintain for life. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming onto our podcast today, Bec. We really appreciate all your insights, and I love following you, and we really can't wait to see what else happens out of isolation. Maybe there'll be something exciting to see, but you really inspire a lot of people, and I can't wait to keep watching your story.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Hopefully we can check out your gym one day as well.
Oh yeah, you're always welcome. You can always just rock up. There's always lollies there too, so.
Perfect.
Thank
you so much, Bec.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers, see ya.
Bye.